It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's about a minute past the hour on this, the 14th day of September, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room. It's free. It's easy. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right there among some of the finest progressive chatting folks on Earth in the madcap, merry, multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Just, like I said, pick out a screen name and a password, and you'll be greeted by Anatole and Hoghead and Jug-a-Punch and Kid Mark and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and V.T. Blom, and capably moderated by that dynamic duo, longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed this mid-September afternoon folded space in Northern California to become Man Cave, and the triumphant return of all-around great guy and midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan. Welcome back. The electricity is back for Steve, and so that means he's in the chat room and there to greet you should you decide to wander in. This is a listener supported radio operation. Well, September's been kind of rocky. So is August, for that matter. But we managed to see the end of August, and now we're at the middle of September and trying to right the ship and come even toward the end of the week. This is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we find ourselves with something on the order of $415 to raise this evening. So, you know, that's one of those odd numbers, and they happen sometimes, and there's not much I can do about it. It makes the ciphering a real booger. But big thanks go out to subscribers Matt in San Francisco and Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you very kindly, Matt and Joseph. And thanks go out to brand new subscriber as of this morning, Alien Jimmy. Thank you very kindly, Jimmy, in California. Thank you very much for your subscription, and thank you for helping to keep The Horn on the air. You might want to check your subscriptions. If you think you're a subscriber and you don't see it show up in a given month, just check to make sure that you didn't accidentally get dumped by PayPal. Because that does happen. We know for a fact that it happens. And it's entirely possible it could have happened. So just have a look. But as it stands, yeah, about $415 to raise this evening. Of course, this evening's broadcast, in addition to being brought to you by the subscribers and the contributors who make conversation radio, progressive conversation radio, possible, it's also brought to you by Fabulous Fennel. That's right. Fabulous Fennel from Horn Nutritional Labs is a fabulous nutritional supplement that will provide all of your fennel nutritional needs each and every day. That's right. Fabulous fennel only from Horn Nutritional Labs. Get your daily requirement of fennel with Fabulous Fennel from Horn Labs. Only $29.95 for a 30-day supply. And if you act now, we'll provide you a second bottle of Fabulous Fennel for only another $29.95. Fabulous Fennel, because, well, fennel can be kind of off-putting for some folks. I don't particularly care for it because it's got that sort of licorice quality to it. And so to this day, the only way that I can eat fennel is by taking Fabulous Fennel from Horn Nutritional Labs. Fabulous Fennel. It'll get you through the day in a fennelicious way. That's right. And once again, I remind you that Horn Nutritional Labs uses only the finest, highest quality fake nutritional supplements. Thanks. Fabulous Fennel. You'll be glad you didn't, because you can't. Thanks very kindly to Keith for getting us started this evening. That takes us down to 4:05. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very, very kindly. Hopefully we won't. It would be really, really nice to knock this down, as Keith has started out with the help, knock this down so that we don't have a Friday on the Front Porch fundraising miracle that we have to get through. We had one last week, and sometimes the magic works, and sometimes it doesn't. But if we can knock down $405 more dollars, we'll go into tomorrow with just $200 to raise. And no kidding, a ton of bills to pay. So that gets us to about 7 minutes past the hour. No, Devin, no. No, not fabulous fentanyl, fabulous fennel. Because fentanyl, not fabulous. That's fatal fentanyl. You just try to keep them separate there. You know, it could be, Keith, it could be. Keith asking, isn't fennel what you use to put oil in the car? Right. Back when oil still came in cans, you kind of needed a fennel. But now that it comes in those little sort of glug-proof bottles, sometimes you can just turn it up and just put it right in the crankcase and you can leave your fennel on the bench. Mm-hmm. Cowbell for Keith with the putting, using the fennel to put the, yes, absolutely. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have to answer in kind. All right, so now it's 8 minutes past the hour, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And several options for where to go. Since we did manage to talk about the shooting in Dallas, brought to you, of course, by the National Rifle Association, America's most well-connected, politically well-connected, fabulously wealthy domestic terror organization, we might want to follow up a little bit. It turns out that Spencer Haidt, the man who shot 9 and killed 8, as they attempted to watch football games in Plano, Texas this past Sunday. Before we get into it, what's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Brother Deacon Asa asks, but does Fabulous Fennel help me get a boner, Bob? Well, you know what? I'm glad you asked, Brother Deacon Asa. Fabulous fennel functions fine for fornicators falling flaccid. Yes, it absolutely does. Fabulous fennel, only from Horn Nutritional Labs. I went over the details of the NRA's roulette wheel of death stopping on Plano, Texas on Sunday. Apparently the killer had some considerable proficiency with Second Amendment weapons. Tools designed for self-defense. I wouldn't want to get the NRA, America's most wealthy, politically connected domestic terror organization, angry at me. He was proficient with his tool for self-defense, and he defended himself against 9 people passing around nachos and maybe some of that Velveeta Rotel dip and maybe pizza and things like that. He defended himself, and of the 9 people he shot, he killed 8 of them as they sat there absolutely defenseless, because it was, after all, an ambush. But more details are emerging, and I mention this to keep everything in context. Yes, there are other stories out there. There's Russia stuff to talk about, if you want to talk about Russia stuff. There's Michael Flynn's son. There's the fact that apparently Flynn was hired to try to broker a deal whereby Russia would build nuclear power plants in Saudi Arabia. And what a lovely idea that is, I must say. We have shit hemorrhages over the idea of the Iranians having nuclear power plants. But, well, anyway, so we got that. At some point in time, maybe a conversation about Bernie's Medicare for All bill. Sure would be nice to see Medicare for All in the United States. But I'm sure this stuff has been pretty well worn out by our other friends in the progressive broadcastosphere. But there hasn't been that much coverage of the massacre. Because, you know, when you shoot 9 and kill 8, I think it qualifies as a massacre. It at least qualifies, within the meaning of the law, as a mass shooting. Well, Spencer Haidt did that. He shot at 9 people. He killed 8 of them. And in subsequent investigations, the Dallas Morning News reports that Meredith Haidt, the woman who had sought to divorce Spencer Haidt, informed her mother that Spencer Haidt had engaged in domestic violence with him at least twice. Okay, at least twice. It was also reported that Spencer Haidt had said to a friend, "How can the one person you're supposed to love more than life itself end up being the one person you hate more than life itself?" Meredith, now dead, murdered, was trying to move on with her life. And her mama, Debbie Lane, upon being interviewed by WFAA, said, "I think he," Spencer Haidt, "saw our comfort, ease, and happiness, and her embracing a new life, and resented it to the maximum, and responded the way he did." So this leads into a query of why it is that there seems to be such a predictable correlation between domestic violence and subsequent acts of homicidal rage. because it's definitely there. Women, according to at least one study, possibly more, women are 70 times more likely. Wow. To be killed in the 2 weeks after they leave their abuser. Than they are when they stay in the relationship. This might explain why it is so difficult for abused women to get out of abusive relationships.
Well, why didn't she just leave?
Well, probably because she was afraid for her life. Right? Mm-hmm. There's actually a good bit of data out there. Not nearly enough, really, when you get right down to it. And you can find out things like there's often a history of domestic violence for mass shootings that don't even involve a current or former significant other. As the folks at Think Progress noted, James Alex Field Jr., who committed the murder in Charlottesville with his automobile, you know, the Nazi. Well, he had a history of domestic violence. He had hit his mama in the head and threatened her back in 2010 when she told him to stop playing video games. He also held a knife on her and spat on her. There was a domestic violence history with James T. Hodgkinson, who shot at the baseball practice over in Virginia back in June. Esteban Santiago, the man who started squeezing off rounds and trying to kill people in Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, Florida International Airport last January. He managed to kill five people. He had a history of domestic violence. The guy who shot up the Pulse nightclub and killed 49 people, wounded 58 others, had a history of beating on his wife. So this is the kind of thing that is worth noting. I mention it because of something that recently happened. In Spokane, Washington, that is, that's where there was yet another murderous rampage by someone with a freedom protector, a kid. Freeman High School in the Rockford area near Spokane. At around 10:30 in the morning yesterday, went on a homicidal rampage. And the shooter managed to shoot one person in the face. A young man named Sam Strahan walked toward him trying to stop the young killer, Caleb Sharp. He's presently in custody, but he hasn't been yet charged. Three other people he shot and wounded. Well, digging around a little bit, apparently he had put videos on YouTube showing him shooting toy guns as well as having put up a video of him possessing a semi-automatic rifle. Yeah. And so it was that yesterday morning he walked into Freeman High School with two firearms with him, went up to the second floor, and opened fire. Spokane County Sheriff Ozzy Nezovich said he attempted to fire one weapon. It jammed. He went to his next weapon, and a student walked up to him, engaged him, and that student was shot. That student did not survive. That was someone trying to stop the killing. High school freshman Elisa Vigil said, "I heard a loud pop, and I turned around, and I saw him. He shot the girl next to me, and she fell down as everyone was running. I could just hear screaming, 'Help me,' the young woman said. He was eventually subdued. He was not killed, Caleb Sharp. He was subdued and survived his own murderous rampage. Here's the statement by Spokane County Sheriff Ozzy Nezovich. He said, "These are senseless and tragic events that really don't need to happen." He went on and said, "We need to figure out what's going on with our society, that our children decide they need to take weapons to deal with the issues they're facing." What a heartbreakingly true statement that is. What's going on with our society? Well, for starters, our entire country is held hostage by the most politically well-connected, wealthiest domestic terror organization in the country, if not the world, the National Rifle Association. You cannot advocate for anything that resembles common sense in regard to firearms without the NRA bringing the full force of its wrath and its fury down upon you. And this applies particularly to politicians. The NRA has promulgated the idea that America is a vast and terrifying nation filled with bad guys with guns, and that the only hope is for other people to have guns with which to contend against them. An idea that we have repeatedly deconstructed here on this little program. It's hard to get the drop on somebody who's ambushing you. The young man, Sam Strahan, who was killed trying to stop Caleb Sharp, it would have made no difference if he had had a gun. Had he had a gun, Caleb Sharp probably would have killed him more quickly. And you'll note that there was no gun involved in taking him down. This puts the lie to the lie that is told by the NRA. But this is something we have to deal with. You know, sometimes the Sam Strahans of the world, heartbreaking though it is, they have to die so that pasty-faced, doughy white people can feel like they're safe because they've got a house full of goddamn guns. So that they can put a pistol in their pocket just because they're going down to the local Rippy Mart for a bag of ice and to fill the tank with gas. It's where we are. Mm-hmm. And it is apparently where we'll stay. Oh, and by the way, I guess maybe since he was a juvenile, people might ask the question, well, damn, where would Caleb Sharp have come up with a firearm? I mean, it's a fair question, right? Where could he possibly have gotten the firearm? I mean, was he a particularly mature-looking adolescent and was able to hoodoo his way through the gun purchase process at, say, a gun show where there's no background check? I mean, the kid was 15. Still is, for that matter. So how did he get a gun? Oh, wait. He got the guns from his parents. Paul Frick, a junior at Freeman High School, said we knew he had an assault rifle because he uses it in his YouTube videos. Apparently, Sam Strahan, the young man who was killed, looked at Caleb Sharp and said, I always knew you were going to shoot up the school. And then he shot up Caleb Sharp because freedom. Somebody needs to ask Glenn Stinchfield over at the NRA whether this firearm was a weapon or a tool for self-defense. Because obviously, to the extent that it came from his daddy's gun safe, it was a tool for self-defense. But that line gets kind of gray and fuzzy, doesn't it? When the young scion of the family decides to take it to school. But yes, apparently his parents bought for him his very own semi-automatic assault rifle. That's the one that jammed. Then he pulled the pistol and shot the people that he shot. Melissa Luck, reporting for KXLI TV4 News, reports that Caleb Sharp had been in the care of a school counselor for suicidal ideations. She continued, he got the guns from his father's large gun safe located at their home. He's familiar with the operation of firearms. Today he decided to bring guns to school, including a rifle, which was stored in his large duffel bag, and a handgun inside his coat pocket. Well, at least she didn't call it a weapon. Right, Glenn Stinchfield? Yeah. Ms. Luck also reported that he was going to teach everyone at school a lesson about bullying. He wasn't particularly interested in shooting any given selected individual. It's not like he had a list. It's just that some people needed to die so that other people would learn. Gosh. Thanks. Thanks, NRA. That Eddie Eagle program sure works wonders with young people and firearms, doesn't it? Yeah, Kelly, sadly, you're right. The United States always solves its problems at the end
of a gun.
So in the midst of all of the other madness, the insanity, I thought that attention should be paid to a kid in Spokane County, Washington, and 8 dead folks in Plano, Texas, who both just happened, all of whom happened to be standing there at the table when the NRA's roulette wheel landed and pointed and fired at them. Just kind of, it's the only decent thing we can do. Yep, Silent R. Lamar pointing out racism is as American as baseball and apple pie. Sure it is. And we've got some of that too. We'll need to go to Mississippi for that. Down along the Gulf Coast, past Christiane, a place that was hammered by Hurricane Katrina some years back, the bridge between Bay St. Louis and past Christiane being wiped out. ...27-year-old Aviana White was a passenger in an automobile that was pulled over in Mississippi. Upon pulling him over, police discovered that he didn't have a driver's license. And lo and behold, Aviana White had an outstanding warrant for a misdemeanor domestic violence charge from 2014. She wouldn't tell the officers her name as a consequence. As the event unfolded, Aviana White strolled back away from the automobile and called the Past Christiane Police Department to complain about how she was being treated. Did I mention that Aviana White, who was black, was pregnant? Well, she was. And while she had placed the call, a cop came charging toward her with her with his stun gun pulled, his taser. And Ms. White said, "Be careful with that thing. I'm pregnant." That's when the police officer in Past Christiane applied the taser directly to her abdomen and electrocuted her quite deliberately 3 times. And then pulled back and electrocuted her once more in the leg. Mercifully, Aviana White is still alive. No word on her baby. One hopes that the baby is okay. One hopes that the baby has not been irreparably harmed by the actions of the police officer, who was told outright that his would-be victim was pregnant. Isn't it interesting? I bet if Officer Friendly there was just sitting around talking, among the right kind of people, he'd be happy to tell you how pro-life he is. and how abortion is murder. But, you know, when it comes to putting a taser against a pregnant woman's abdomen, well, it's a tough world out there. It's a tough world. Update on a story from yesterday evening. Young Taylor Ragg, the kid who at Transylvania University who was terrorizing a young woman named Paula Garcia. Taylor Ragg has sort of disappeared from the campus of Transylvania University, and the university will not say whether he was expelled or whether he left voluntarily, but it was not inspiring the degree of help that Ms. Garcia got from the university administration. Thorns, thorns, thorns in the side. Okay, how about we wander over to Missouri and reach for another rose and probably grab a handful of thorns. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, do you think the kid's parents should be charged with negligent homicide or contributing to the delinquency of a minor or some fucking thing? I mean, giving a 15-year-old an assault rifle is the height of negligence. Well, you know, that's what you'd say, Snowflake. That's not negligence, that's patriotism. You got to teach them young how to work a firearm so they can be prepared to open carry in our dangerous, dangerous society, especially in those urban areas, if you know what I mean. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Right? Mm-hmm. No, Missouri. Where a young woman was 17 years old, she was accosted at school by her teacher. The young woman, whose name has been disclosed, and there's nothing shameful about this. You know, I'll mention her name because she is the victim in this. Kelsey Paige Anderson went to school dressed as, many 17-year-old young women do, wearing shoes, a pair of fashionably partially destroyed jeans, you know, where I'm so old, I remember when my mom would get the iron-on patches and iron them onto the knees of my pants. When I began to wear the blue jeans, the material through, and get holes in my pants, she'd iron on a patch over them. And, you know, there was no disgrace in that. But now, I had it, you know, my little holdout knee blue jeans of, say, 1971 would have been the height of fashion in 2017. Because you actually... Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Geezer. I'm about to make a geezer observation. I should probably take a handful of fabulous fennel to provide me with a little bit more youthful vigor so that I wouldn't say such geezery things, but, well, I don't. I took the last of my fabulous fennel earlier today because that's the only way I can take fennel, you know? I don't like the taste that much, so I take a few handfuls of fabulous fennel every day. But anyway, she was wearing a pair of blue jeans with the, you know, with I don't know, cuts in, you know, about the knees. The knees. Supposedly the only place on earth you get worked up about a woman's knees are like old Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Afghanistan. But then again, they get worked up about eyebrows and ankles and fingernails and things like that if it happens to be, you know, female. So anyway, young Kelly Paige Anderson, 17 years old, went to school one day wearing a long-sleeved blouse, a pair of blue jeans, shoes, and carrying her book bag. Okay? I mean, this feels stupid because I'm sitting here telling you how she was dressed. You know, in answer to the question of,
well, how was she dressed? Was she asking for it?
Well, she got to school that morning, and a teacher got after her. Now we're talking about a full coverage red print peasant top with a thoroughly laced up collar placket, long sleeves, long hair that covered her shoulders. Little white girl. Nothing swaying or hanging out or projecting or, you know, any of that stuff. And as her mama reports, a teacher told her to go to the office because she was in violation of the school's dress code. Remember, this is Missouri, not Kandahar. Okay? So she gets sent to the office. But before Kelsey gets sent to the office, she looks at the teacher and says, "Why are you sending me to the office?" At which point, the teacher replied, "Well, bustier women need to wear clothing that covers their cleavage. Plus-size women need to dress accordingly." And all of this was said to her in front of other students, her peers. So when Mama got to the office, she's a little hot, as I think any of us would be. And Mama said, "I began explaining that my daughter was just sexualized by her teacher in front of the whole class. She was embarrassed and horrified. She requested to be removed from the teacher's class. He," note pronoun please, "he said no. He continued," the principal did, "to defend the teacher. I could see we were getting nowhere. I was close to losing my temper. I took my daughter by the hand and we left. I refuse to put my daughter in a situation where her self-esteem is completely destroyed. She's there to learn. This whole time she was missing out on an education while we were all sitting in a room discussing her boobs. How often does this happen to your sons? Seems like another way to keep girls uneducated." And, you know, no word on any further resolution or anything resembling resolution. God damn, this is, well, it's infuriating. Your heart just goes out to Mama and daughter and the whole family. And Jesus Christ, the hell's wrong with that teacher? Plus size women need to dress accordingly. Bustier women need to wear clothing that covers their cleavage. Why were you looking at it, teach? Fortunately, Mama took a picture of her daughter. You would just about need a goddamn drone flying directly overhead, pointing straight down, to even tell. Well, but you get the idea. Note that this was not prompted by any of the other students. Nobody was hooting. Nobody was catcalling. although, of course, I'm sure had boys been hooting and catcalling, they would have been defended in this because, naturally, boys cannot be counted upon to restrain themselves in the face of feminine pulchritudinity. Your boobs are bigger than most girls, and you're gonna have to try harder. Really? She has breasts that are bigger than entire girls? Wow. You know, it's moments like this you just look up and go, Jesus Christ, our country's stupid. And I know. It's interesting and stuff to talk about the highfalutin policy stuff that every other radio program has talked about. But that's stuff up at the apex of the pyramid. It's this stuff that goes on down at the base of it. That really tells you what kind of a country we are. And the kind of country that we are is a really fucking stupid one. And you know, this isn't a one-off. Ask any young woman. I'd just about wager that 100% of them have been at some point in time told something about their clothing. In relation to their bodies. And the sexualization of those bodies. Brother Deacon Asa sent me a note. He said, I just saw that photo. If her collar was any higher, it'd be a goddamn turtleneck. Which is true. What do you want to bet? Setting up a straw man here, and I'm going to knock the snot out of it. What do you want to bet that teacher's in church every Sunday? What do you want to bet that teacher attends a church that says that women are to submit to their husbands in the way that the church submits unto Christ? Or believes in a literal interpretation of Scripture, you know, the part of the Scripture that says women are supposed to shut the fuck up everywhere, and if they've got any questions, wait till they get home and ask their husbands there. and we think the Muslims are oppressive. Yeah, Earther with a note saying, you can't hold boys responsible for boys' actions, Bob. Boys are the child equivalent of Republicans. IOKRPCP. How does that go? Right. And these little right-wing jackasses are forever running their mouths about, yeah, political correctness is ruining our country. But a 17-year-old girl shows up for class in a long sleeve blouse and a pair of jeans, only to be told by her teacher, and we don't know the gender of the teacher, but we do know the gender of the principal, only to be told that she's likely, you know, she's just, you know, her charms is too much on display. She could not be more covered unless she was wearing a goddamn burqa. And you know what? God forbid she'd showed up in a skirt that day. You know, we want the girls to dress all feminine and everything and not be all mannish or, you know, but if she'd showed up in a skirt, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We can see your ankle. Jumping Jehoshaphat. Cover her cleavage. You know, these are the kind of people that make me worry about children actually attending school. merciful God. And then, out in New Mexico, just sort of popping around, you know, here and there. Because, if anything, this provides a sense that the stupid is not isolated. There is stupid all over this country. So we have discussed on this program in the past, and people of multiple ethnicities have opined on this. The usage of that particular racial epithet among peer groups and not necessarily used in the context of whatever somebody, and, you know, instead of it ending in ER, it's spelled with an A at the end. You know what I'm talking about. Well, there's a middle school in New Mexico, Mesa Middle School. Mesa Middle School has a football program. Now, that's a given what we're learning about the propensity of football to ruin the brains of the people who play it, I think there's a separate discussion to be had about whether or not there should really be any more midget league, peewee league, middle school, maybe even high school football. Maybe there shouldn't even be college football. Maybe if football is what you want to play, maybe that should be separated out from the educational process, and you just develop feeder leagues that feed up into the pros, where at least the people participating in it know fully and freely and knowingly go into the sport with an understanding of what could very well happen to their brains as a result. And we don't have this sham that there's anything fucking educational about it anymore. But anyway, at Mesa Middle School in New Mexico, they've still got a football team. And Thomas Davis has been an assistant coach at Mesa Middle School for the past 2 years. And he got a little frustrated. Okay, he got a lot frustrated. Maybe if I were in the same shoes, you would say I got disgusted, because he kept hearing the players, the young student athletes there at Mesa Middle School, using that word at each other. And yes, Thomas Davis is a black man. And so he began trying to put an end to the usage of that word. And this week, he got fired as an assistant coach there at Mesa Middle School. Now, it's not like he just heard it one day and, that's the last straw. I've heard enough of this. God bless America. I'm sick of it. No. He reprimanded members of the team for using the word, but he also went to the head coach, a guy by the name of Gabriel Flores. Gabriel Flores, in turn, told Thomas Davis, it's not your job to reprimand the players. And then the two grown men got into it. That's when Gabriel Flores called 911. And police officers showed up and told them both to leave the field. And then Thomas Davis got fired for trying to get boys to quit hurling a racial epithet around. Mr. Davis stated that he had previously gone to Coach Flores before and talked about the boys' casual use of that word. The kids weren't yelling it over at the opposing team. They weren't using it only with their black teammates. It's just a word that they used, you know, just like they'd use, oh, I don't know, grapefruit. Or lunch meat. Or, you get the idea. Thomas Davis said, I've addressed it several times with him. I've addressed the kids several times. And he said the episode escalated far beyond anything that we expected. He then showed up at the Roswell school board meeting, again, trying to convince them that it was their job as educators to teach the young students that racist language, racist words, are unacceptable in modern society. Let's see if we can get the audio to work.
I'm here tonight to address changes that we need to make, changes that need to be made with racial insensitive remarks made by children. Maybe we need to educate the educators that are educating our kids. I've been through this 3 years ago. Different board, different superintendent, but the same problem. Pretty sure a lot of you you'll probably hear when I went through that. It's the same thing again. Nothing's been done. Nothing's been changed. Things have gotten worse. It's sad that we can't get along with being human with each other. We can't teach our kids that. Be social with each other. We teach reading, writing, math, arithmetic, and stuff like that. But as educators, we need to teach social skills also. What goes on when you leave? How do you get along with people that are not looking, don't look like you, don't act like you, don't have things that you have? Because the N-word and any other racial word that's being used by these students, it's totally going out of control. Not at one particular school, not on a football field, but just in general, it's out of control. And if you don't address that, it's going to be in a situation that's, you know, it's ugly. And we don't need it. I'm a product of the RISD system. They're proud to say that. But being involved and being an educator and coaching and hearing and seeing the things that I hear and that I see every day, something needs to change. And soon, we need to change and soon. If it doesn't happen, Lord forbid, I pray change comes fast. That's all I have for you. Thank you for your time.
Can't ask for much. I know the audio was sort of difficult to grab, but you can't ask for much more in the way of an eloquent defense of the idea of civil conduct. And again, we're talking middle school here, which, depending on any given state's definition, runs somewhere around 5, 6, 7, 8, grades 5, 6, 7, 8, 6, 7, 8, 9. Around and so, as I've remarked in the past, you could not pay me to teach kids in that age group. But fortunately, we do have some dedicated professionals. Apparently, they're not teaching high school in Missouri, but we do have some dedicated professionals who are trying to teach children how to be decent human beings at a time in their lives when they're in that gray area between child and adolescent and you know, all the stereotypes, the hormones are raging, yada, yada, yada. And they're becoming exposed to the wider social world and the language that is used therein and the conduct that takes place therein. And so you got an educator here who's trying to teach them not only how to read and how to write, not only teach them how to do their ciphering and their gazettas, but thinks that they need to be taught how to be human beings within what we consider to be, laughingly consider to be, a civilized society, or what used to be referred to as polite society. and he got fired. I don't know where Mr. Davis, Coach Davis, will wind up. But you get the idea that maybe this guy has the right idea, and the people on the school board and at the school who have not acted for two freaking years, even though they've been constantly made aware of this problem, and it is a problem, because frankly, words, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Bullshit. You move out into the wider world and start tossing that word around, and things can get interesting in a damned hurry, as we can find on, as we can discover on just about any given day in this country. How does a school board hear that and not go, "Oh, sir, we are so sorry. Jesus Christ, we're sorry." And then again, if there are schools out there that would really, really like to have somebody who's dedicated to the idea of raising up a group of civilized little human beings to go into the wider world, call him quick. Because he damned well deserves the respect of any school system that wants to send something more than gangs of little heathens. And I'm not, you know, I'm not talking about any particular ethnicity who doesn't want to send little heathens out into the world and prefers the notion that maybe, just maybe, they could turn into, you know, the future. But that's just me. So here we are at the close of true enough. Note from Terrace. Why melanin-enhanced people don't call whitey racist. The ones who did have been dead for generations. Mm-hmm. Entirely too true. And adding to this conversation, Steve in New York, the word F-A-O-T. I can tell you that when I hear that word, it does not just roll off the back. You know what it does do? It feels as if it sucks the personal power right out of me. It sends a cold sensation down my spine with an added feeling of extreme nervousness and fear. Which reminds me, I told that story at the beginning of the program last night of the part-time bus driver, full-time sheriff's deputy in Clay County, West Virginia, who said in reference to a young student getting on his bus, well, he used that word. No sense in being gratuitous about it. Over at RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, which you can find, RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, and of course on Facebook as well, Republican Dirty Tricks, my good friend Tara kindly took the piece that I wrote on Facebook and expanded on it and turned it into a larger article over at RDT, and accompanied with it created a Care 2 petition calling for the termination of this paragon, the part-time bus driver, full-time deputy, the termination of his employment. You can find a link to it over on my Facebook page. You can share that around, share the petition around. Because you can't, we, we can't let this stuff just go go unnoticed. Just blow by the boards. It took Herculean effort to get the nasty racist woman out of her position in Clay County 10 months ago. You know, the one who referred to Michelle Obama as a ape in heels, talking about how nice it'd be to have a classy woman, you know, one that took her clothes off for money and everything. I added that part. As first lady, and no longer have that Michelle Obama, that a ape in heels. It took a whole lot of effort to finally get her busted. And you know, I'm not talking about retribution for retribution's sake. I'm talking about the public trust. In the case of the full-time deputy, part-time bus driver, full-time Christian, we're talking about somebody that is entrusted with deadly weapons and who has manifested nothing short of hate for people who don't have sex the way he thinks they should have sex according to his Bible. So by all means, share that petition around. And don't let this nastiness, this hillbilly horse shit up the holler, just slide by. I don't advocate very often and ask you to do things, but this is one of those. So at 7 minutes past the hour, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back to the phones and so forth. We'll take a break. It being a Thursday, we've got Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up with the Green News Report. And we are still at $405 to go in fundraising for the evening. I cannot tell you how very much I do not want to be talking about a $605 Friday on the Front Porch miracle. And I wish there was some other way to do this. I can't say that enough. But I've never been able to figure one out. And by my lights, I feel a lot more comfortable with this community, asking this community to support that which is freely given, than I would providing you with a 180-minute program that worked out to only having 111 minutes of content and 69 minutes of advertising. Asking you to buy crap you don't want in the first place, don't need, and probably doesn't work. Have I told you about Fabulous Fennel from Horn Labs? See what I mean? I'm doing these, not that I have to explain, but I'm doing these stupid little pitches every night just as a reminder of what goes on out there in the rest of the world. So, yeah, we've got $405 to raise. If we could take a bite out of that, it would be great. Arthur says, I thought you were doing great with the vegetable hustles. I mean, supplements. Yeah, you get the idea, Arthur. You get the idea. Note coming from Robert in Australia. Good manners are the oil that makes society work. If I'm not mistaken, it's a quote from someone famous, you know, or not. There are a few versions of the saying. Good manners are the oil that makes society work is the version I generally use. And it's an accurate portrayal. Unfortunately, good manners are on the downslope, and racism, sexism, xenophobia, bigotry, prejudice are in the ascendancy, and I think we damned well know why. I've got another example of that maybe for later in the program. So, yeah, little break, Green News Report, and hopefully after the break I'll come back and tell you, hey, you know, fundraising's over for the night, or at least halfway done, or we're caught up for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I don't know. We'll see. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thursday, September 14, 2017.
The urgent need for relief aid across this region is growing. Residents struggling to get by.
Desperate conditions in the Caribbean in the wake of Hurricane Irma. 8 dead in sweltering Florida nursing home as power in the state remains out for millions. New major gasoline spill and new lawsuits in the wake of Hurricane Harvey. Plus,
the impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We are seeing them play out in real time.
Understanding the impact of a warming world on extreme weather events.
All of those extremes and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Even though everything that scientists said was going to happen, the right-wingers are still, no, we can't blame climate change. Yes, I agree. My theory is it has something to do with Hillary's emails.
I knew it. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, this monster Hurricane Irma apparently has a very long tail, as there are a lot of people struggling in a lot of places to get by, even though we are now days later.
Yep, storm impacts last long after the floodwaters recede and the winds die down. As the dramatic images of Hurricane Irma are fading and the corporate news media is starting to move on, the victims are still grappling with the aftermath. In the U.S. Virgin Islands, relief aid has been slow to arrive and desperate conditions are creating a growing humanitarian concern. That's according to Virgin Islands Daily News reporter Suzanne Carlson in an interview with MSNBC.
There's a lot of people on islands that were already struggling before the hurricane even hit. They're finding themselves having to suddenly walk in search of food, water, gas. It is extraordinarily dire for a lot of people here, and there are many people suffering tremendously.
In the battered Florida Keys, where there is no electricity and little clean water, preliminary estimates from FEMA indicate one out of every four homes in the Keys was destroyed, and thousands will require long-term temporary housing assistance. And a very sad development out of Hollywood, Florida. Authorities confirmed that 8 elderly residents of a nursing home who made it through the storm itself died after several days of stiflingly hot and extremely humid conditions in their facility due to the loss of air conditioning.
Yeah, you say the media is already moving on. That's true. But I think the extent of this devastation is just beginning to come to light. This is going to take a very long time and is going to be very painful for a lot of folks.
In Houston, Hurricane Harvey's floodwaters triggered another major fuel spill. Nearly 500,000 gallons of gasoline spilled from storage tanks into waters along the Houston Ship Channel. It's just the newest of more than 24 spills that the Associated Press has documented from fuel and chemical tanks caused by Harvey in the heavily industrialized area.
Well, I'm glad that AP is documenting them because Trump's EPA certainly does not seem to be doing so.
And testing conducted by the New York Times confirms that floodwaters in at least 2 Houston neighborhoods are contaminated with bacteria and toxins that can make people sick.
Mm.
In addition to rescue costs and recovery costs, the cost of lawsuits is also beginning to mount. A group of first responders who were exposed to toxic smoke from the Arkema chemical plant fire in Crosby, Texas, that was caused by Hurricane Harvey flooding, are now suing the company, saying it should have disclosed the types of hazardous chemicals stored on site that ended up sending them to the hospital suffering from toxic fumes.
But of course, they had Texas's help in keeping that information secret, keeping that information from the public, and yes, apparently even from Texas's own first responders. Amazing.
Homeowners in Houston have filed suit against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the state after the Corps intentionally released floodwaters from reservoirs that flooded and destroyed their homes. Meanwhile, a new analysis by Public Citizen found that some corporate news media outlets ignored the climate change context of these 2 record-breaking back-to-back storms. TV news networks ABC and NBC did not mention climate change in many hours of hurricane coverage.
Mention what?
Climate change.
Never heard of it.
Some did so minimally or gave platforms to non-scientist climate change deniers. And in case all of that isn't enough, the wildfire season in 2017 is shaping up to be the worst ever. Climate scientist Dr. Michael E. Mann of Penn State said in a recent broadcast interview that the public's understanding of the growing impacts of climate change is crucial.
The impacts of climate change are no longer subtle. We are seeing them play out in real time. When people understand how much damage climate change is doing now, That's a real threat to the forces of denial and delay. The forces of inaction and delay don't want us to be able to use a teaching moment like this.
As I said, what climate change? Never heard of it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Science is real, from the Big Bang to DNA. Science is real, from evolution to the Milky Way.
21 minutes past the hour, just 9 minutes short of being halfway through this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I do want to send out thanks, sincere, deep, and abiding thanks to Charlene and to Cynthia. Cynthia in Hawaii, thank you, both of you. We are now down to $345 in fundraising to go, just to, you know, to come up even so that we don't have a giant, you know, miracle to do tomorrow. I got bills that are waiting, awaiting payment. And just as soon as we raise enough to pay them, that's what I'm going to do, so that we can, you know, stay on the air here. Well, you know, one of those things that makes broadcasting like this fun, when the fine folks at Frontier Communications can't seem to manage to keep a connection going that you pay a brutal amount of money for every month. Thanks, Frontier Communications. Sucking for several years in Appalachia and other places as well. Frontier Communications, this is an unpaid product mention because I doubt they'd pay me to tell you how badly Frontier sucks. Yes. So, sort of keeping with the Thorn in the Side Thursday theme, let me get back in the chat room. Okay. Hi, guys. Sorry about that. Keeping with the Thorn in the Side Thursday theme, how about some new poll data? But also, I do want to get to the I want to get to the nursing home story and other stuff too. But this is, of course, Conversation Radio, and if you want to engage in conversation, I heartily welcome you to. You know the number, 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. You can get in that way too, and you know, we'll do that whole conversation thing, you know, for as long as we're here to do it. But there's some new polling data out. It was a study by Reuters Ipso. They got together and decided to. Along with the University of Virginia, that there were some questions they thought might be worth answering. And what they were asking specifically about is the views of people in this country on issues relating to, and you know, I'm really sick of the word race, because race isn't real. Race is a construct. Race is something that was invented by white Europeans. I prefer ethnicity. Maybe that's close, but, you know, anyway, they asked about racial attitudes. Among other things, they asked about interracial marriage. And the poll also asked about whether white European heritage was in danger. So here's what you find out. If you want to talk about straight up adherence to, you know, the ideologies of the Klan and the neo-Nazis and the skinheads and, you know, those violent, putrid, failed examples of members of the human race, fascists, 6% of the people responding to the poll said that they either strongly or somewhat support what is referred to as the alt-right. I call them the alt-white. Asked about white nationalism, the number goes up to 8%. You know what? Both of those numbers are bigger. And I remember, and look, I'm not trying to peel the scab off of 2016. That's not my point here. But I remember the conversation that we had in the aftermath of the election when people were saying, Bob, we know who was saying this, those people, they're not racist. They've got economic anxiety. I mean, not everybody who voted for Trump was a racist. Remember? I'm sure you do if you're a longtime listener to this program. Yeah, okay. The argument was made at that time that the number of outright Klansmen, that can't be more than a tiny fraction of the American people. Six % is not a tiny fraction of the American people. 8% of Americans supporting white nationalism is not a tiny fraction. Here's where it gets worse, though, because this is in line, and yes, I'm using these poll numbers as a reflection, as a way of validating what I've been saying all along about the nature of American society. It is worse than we want to believe. You know, this is one of those places where knowledge runs headlong into belief, and the belief is not supported by the facts. When the questions in the Reuters Ipso University of Virginia poll got a little more nebulous, when they asked things like, how about interracial marriage? They asked specifically, should marriage only be allowed between two people of the same race? 16% of the people answering that question agreed. 14% neither agreed nor disagreed. 14% of people couldn't say yes or no to that question, which kind of defaults to no. 16% said no. Said yes. Okay, I'm garbling this. God damn it. 16% of the people answering the poll said marriage should only be allowed between two people of the same race. 14% neither agreed nor disagreed. Now, you take those two percentages together, you add them, cipher them up, you get 30%. 30% of the American people is what? Yes, 75 million Americans. Yeah, think so? That's a whole lot more than actually voted for Donald Trump. Not less. Then let's take a look at something else. Presented with the statement, America must protect and preserve its white European heritage, 31% said, hell yeah! 39% agreed white people are currently under attack in this country. 59% of people said political correctness threatens our liberty as Americans to speak our minds. Do you remember when back in, November or so, we played the clip from Breitbart Radio of Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos talking, and they said, more than 50% of the GOP base is alt-white, alt-right. And I begged and I pleaded. And I said, don't take my word for it, but for God's sakes, please take their word for it. They know who they're talking to. They've got data with finer grain than fucking emery cloth, okay? This polling data supports me. This polling data says I'm right. And that and all the twee precious people who said, no, Bob, they just have economic anxiety, were wrong. This is a racist nation. It's been historically described as our original sin. And there's no getting around it. You know, Loving versus Virginia, which struck down constitutionally bans on interracial marriage in the late 1960s, is still opposed by something on the order of 30% of the people in this country. Isn't it curious that that same 30, 33, 35% is identical to the cancerous knot of hard cases and dead enders who, no matter what, will continue to support Donald Trump? Memo to anybody who wants to unseat him. You're not gonna convert the maggots. Your only hope is to form a coalition of women and Hispanics and people of color. And yeah, some white folks too, like me. Because you're not going to get Emery and Marvelline there who have had their brains reduced to goddamn pudding after watching Fox News since 1990 to come over to your way of thinking, no matter how sweetly you talk to them. The only hope this country has is to build that coalition I mentioned and go forward without them. Okay. All right, let's run over to the phones real quick and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
I'm getting along. How about you?
I just want to let you know that Rufus made the centerfold of Cat House.
Woo, Rufus. A big check come with that, or just a big bag of cat chow?
Now, I'm not sure of a big bag of something. Well, I know what it is. But anyway, I want to serve as a testimonial for your new product called...
Fabulous Fennel? Fabulous Fennel, yes.
No, it's Fab Fen.
Well, okay. Well, yeah. Among the glitterati and the cognoscenti, absolutely, it's Fab Fen.
Well, I'll playfully sit you.
Yes, I saw your playful photograph. I muted the microphone long enough to scream.
I'm sure you probably said a sick mind is a terrible thing to waste.
And lucky for us, you chose not to waste it, but to... And you chose not to hide your light under a bushel.
No.
Or something else.
Oh, there you go. But anyway, so... I didn't mean to be in any way offensive with that, but I just thought it was kind of funny. Actually, it was my way to signal Donald Trump. You know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I do.
Yeah. But, yeah,
did you happen to notice that he made a point while in Florida today... he was going to hand out hoagies. He was going to pass out food. And he made a point of saying, these food handler gloves are too small for my very big hands.
No, he didn't say that.
Yes, yes. He held it up to show that the gloves were too small for his hands. What is melanoma saying to him in the bedroom? I mean, can she just not lay off?
Probably nothing at all. And I dare say that they haven't touched each other. And unless he has her tied up by
now stop it. And no, because granted, they're neighbors down there, Trump and Rush Limbaugh, but Rush Limbaugh charges big money for putting a woman in the pit, especially since he's got his wife down there.
I tell you, you floored me on that one, but he would actually say those big old plastic gloves that people handle food with. My God.
Well, they're not big enough, Jim.
Well, Sasquatch has had those things, and the glove does, in spite of shit, the glove does acquit. Does not acquit. I don't know. It's just, that one knocked me off my feet.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's just, you know, it's like I said, it says, hey, breaking news, then you ought to say, what's he said next? What will he say?
Well, and speaking of breaking news, there's been another missile launch from North Korea, so we won't hear anything. We won't hear about anything but that for the next 24 hours. There are people out there that just really want to get their war on in the Korean Peninsula. I guess maybe it's because the Korean War veterans have gotten to a certain age now where, well, you know, it's kind of like they couldn't go after Social Security until all the Depression era grown-ups were dead. Because they would have marched to the pole en masse. And the same with the Korean-era veterans. They're all kind of gone now. So what the hell? Let's get it back on. What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Your point's well made.
And Kim Jong Bad Haircut declared that North Korea would, and apparently this is the translation, sink Japan.
And turn us into a lake of fire. Don't forget that.
Oh, well, that's true. But it kind of goes to support my contention that when Korea is ticking through its ancient grievances, yeah, number one on that hit parade is Japan.
Well, historically, those two have always been at loggerheads, even before the Korean War. I mean, you had Korea and Japan.
That's what I was going to point out. Even before the Second World War, Japan was trying to annex Korea at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century.
Well, where do you think the term kamikaze comes from? Divine wind. Because it was a Korean fleet that was headed for Japan, and a storm blew it back into the sea.
Not to be contentious. But that was actually Kublai Khan's fleet that was blown back.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that that certainly contributed to the mix over there in that part of the world.
And a typhoon showed up and blew the Chinese Navy all the smithereens. That was during the last great expansion of Chinese culture when the empire sent out what were called, and it's fascinating to read about for anybody who would care to, when China sent out the treasure fleets. But Japan, Japan invaded the Korean Peninsula in the, 19th century, tried to set up Korea as a client state, tried to impose the learning of Japanese on the Korean people. The grievances are old and real.
And that's
before you even get to the Korean pleasure women of the Second World War.
Or the Japanese experimentation that was done under that program, JN, whatever, not JN, or I can't remember the code for it, but in which they use biological warfare and stuff on these people and use them for experimentation. Sure did. But, you were discussing this business about the public schools and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I did my stint doing that.
Yeah, you did. I know you taught. Yeah.
And I said, I will transition from pedagogy to andragogy, and that's when I went back to Uncle Sam, and that's all I could do. I mean, it was just too much. And that was, oh, 30 years ago. And now, God only knows what it is now, you know? It's just really horrible. I wouldn't be a teacher in the public schools for all the tea in Mexico.
And, you know, the question is why? And if you ask a right-winger, they'll tell you, you know, it's because we got a Department of Education, that's why. I don't think it's as simple as all that. I think there was a concerted effort to eliminate the teaching of things like civics and government. And then, you know, in the more modern era, you've got the advent of, you know, portable computing devices that are phones and cameras and social media. Mm-hmm. With every passing day, even though I use it frequently, I begin to recognize, or I more and more recognize, what a goddamn plague social media is on our culture.
Cell phones, each kid has some type of remote device and stuff like that. And
I mean, it seems like anymore, I go on Twitter, and Twitter is two things: pictures of people's pets and pissed off burners screaming at hilarians, and pissed off hilarians screaming at burners, and pissed off maggots screaming at everybody, and spelling poorly.
Well, you're right. They don't know how to spell, do they? I'm not even on Twitter. I occasionally make a few stuff with Facebook, not very much, and, you know, I'll send a picture out or two, and that's about it. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to just surface briefly is this business with Trump and the Russians. I mean, really, Putin has him by the short hairs.
Oh, it's crazy stuff, and it just piles up every day. And every time I read another one of these stories, I hear, I hear somebody from the so-called progressive left saying, you know, there's nothing to it. It's not real.
No. Well, you get a
little Putin
to
is
Randy
our
Rhodes.
Friend.
Randy Rhodes certainly had a different had a guest on there today that you wouldn't believe, or she was listening to. A gentleman who said that Putin was blackmailing Trump, or made a deal, you know, look, I'll set you up, but I can bring you down because I have enough shit on you to do it. And, of course, deals were made so that Putin's, you know, money all over the world. He's the richest man in the world.
Well, I mean, look at the lies that Trump told about, you know, I remember the debates. Okay? I remember when he said, I don't even have any business in Russia. I haven't had any business in Russia in ages. I mean, I went over there because I've got a pageant over there, but I don't have any. And, you know, lo and behold, they were in negotiations in 2015 to build a Trump Tower in Moscow.
Of course. And I guess they were going to try to make that one higher than, you know, what the tallest building in Moscow used to be, don't you?
Oh, the Lubyanka.
Mm-hmm.
Because from there you could see forever.
For his space, but you could. Absolutely. And they really have him really by the balls. They really do. Because I believe this stuff. And, you know, this is typical KGB, FSB operations.
Okay, so stop right there. You said this is typical KGB operations or FSB.
FSB.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean when you say that?
They're out to wreak havoc. They're, you know, they're not really operating under any model of ideology. They're just out there to cause as much trouble as they can.
Creative chaos is that?
Yeah, creative. Exactly. I mean, you know what Putin did when he had some trouble with the oligarchs over there? He put the wealthiest one behind bars on TV. And then, you know, the other oligarchs beneath this one, as far as level of wealth is concerned, I think they made a little agreement, and Putin got 50%. And maybe he's got that money in banks all over the world, and you know, he was trying to, he can't get to it as long as there are sanctions against him. So basically, this is his way of saying, you know, okay, if you don't let me have mine, you certainly won't have yours. And he's got Trump in right between the crosshairs. He certainly does. And, you know, that whole thing is just a house of cards. All they have to do is Putin wanted to. He could wreak so much havoc with the Trump presidency that, well, I couldn't imagine what would happen if they really let it go and open up the files and, you know, excuse me. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They suppose... Pardon me, it went down the wrong way. But nonetheless, you know, there are all kinds of stories about Trump in Moscow and his cavorting around with Russian call girls and all that kinds of stuff. So, I mean, I believe that's what Putin probably has on him. And he knows it. And the Russians came to him through various all FSB operatives telling him and his sons, you know. Okay,
might that explain why, I mean, I woke up this morning to more of the Chuck and Nancy show. You know, he's reaching out to Charles Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and the maggots went wild this morning. I don't know if you noticed, because Pelosi and Schumer said, yeah, we made a deal on advancing the DREAM Act and intense border security, and immediately Trump responded, no, we didn't. And then they said, well, yeah, we did. And yeah, you've got people like that crazy ass deadbeat dad Joe Walsh screaming, he's dead, Trump is dead. And you know, apparently no visit from the Secret Service for him.
I guess not.
But the maggots were losing their tiny little minds.
Well,
but along the way, here's where my head was headed. Do you suppose that some of this outreach or some of this chummishness with Pelosi and Schumer might have something to do with his growing sense of desperation that I hate to use a word like noose, but the noose is tightening around him, that the walls are closing in with the Russia investigation, and he's hoping that maybe somebody might be able to get the heat off of him. After the way the Republicans have talked about Bob Mueller, they're not going to go anywhere. So maybe he's hoping that the two most powerful Democrats in the Congress might somehow get him to go easy.
Well, he sure as hell is treating them the wrong way. To say one thing at a Chinese dinner in the evening, and then before midnight or whatever, tweet it out, it wasn't going to happen, all bets are off, which is basically what he told them. Is that not so?
That's pretty much it as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, he apparently has some strange things going on between his ears. And he could be in a rather desperate situation.
But the whole lot of them are dirty as hell. You know, the very idea. I mean, look, let's play that game called if someone in the Obama administration had done this. That's the name of the game. If someone in the Obama administration, say a cabinet secretary, had gotten married and demanded the use of a government jet to transport him and his bride to their honeymoon, would there have been anywhere that person could have hidden from the fury of the white wing media, Jim?
Oh no.
I mean, Sean Hannity would have been broadcasting from a goddamn from inside a bell in a bell tower in a Gothic cathedral. He would have been so incensed. But that's exactly what happened. The Treasury Secretary, who all by himself is rich and has ruined my ability to watch any number of movies because now before, I mean, this is just kind of how I am, Jim, you know. Now, before I watch a movie, I have to double-check to make sure that it wasn't executive produced by Steve Mnuchin, okay? Because I won't do it. I will not in any way contribute not a sou, not a widow's mite, not a portion of a penny will I contribute to the pocket of that scumbag, okay? So I got to go through that just to watch a damn movie now. The man is rich, and he wants
what
the tax
position there. I'm not.
He's the secretary of the fucking. He's the secretary of the treasury.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. There have been so many changes in the cabinet, I can't keep up with them.
But he wanted the taxpayers of the United States, and not only wanted, he expected the taxpayers of the United States to pay for his honeymoon travel.
I knew about that. Well, that took a lot of balls to do that. They said that other arrangements were made. What the excuse was he was using that he had some important business to transact?
He thought him traveling was a matter of national security.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that shows you how brazen these people are. They just how bloody crazy they are. And that's all I can say about that. I mean,
it's a shitty little. In any other circumstance, we'd just look at it as a petty grift operation. That's all these people are, is grifters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every
Absolutely.
Last damn one of them.
Well, you know, it's nothing but some type of glorified, sanctified federal mafia outfit that they've got going over there. That's exactly where they operate.
And when you consider, there's another story that broke today. Now, do you remember the story from a couple of weeks ago where now White House Chief of Staff John Kelly said, that because you and I talked about this.
We did.
And I said, you know, how badly would an old Marine have to have been spoken to say that he had never in his entire life been spoken to as badly as he was spoken to by Donald Trump? And I think you and I agreed that that would have that, you know, that would reach some new pinnacles of nasty.
Oh, he is. I mean, every day I hear everything about how horrible he is to people who work for him, and the ones that he's not horrible to are the ones fewer from or further from his reach that he wants to eventually pull in. You know?
So right. So another story breaks today, Jim, that he subjected. The Attorney General of the United States of America, you know, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III,
yeah.
He subjected to him to one of those tirades. And I think, if I recall, I just glanced at the story, he referred to him as he called him to his face an idiot. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, unable to call him out upon the field of honor, just took it. And he said, I will resign, sir. You have demeaned me and called into question my honor.
Well, you know, considering the career of Sessions.
But then he didn't resign.
Every time Trump lets him have it.
Well, sure, but then he didn't resign, Jim. What does this say about the character of a John Kelly or a Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III? You know, that they're porch dogs, okay? They'll take a kicking and then they'll lick the hand of the man who kicked them.
Well, I just wonder what he has on them. You can imagine what he's probably threatened them with. I mean, that man in my opinion, he's just crazy. I mean, he's just mentally impaired, and he's just a mean son of a bitch. He's been that way all of his life. He's just lived in that little isolated place in New York, except for you know, screwing everybody he can. He's dishonest, and, you know, we could go on and on all night about what a bad person he is. But, you know, with a little help from his friends, and also 30% of the American population, 33 or whatever it is, he's still got those people supporting him. And I just don't know when they're going to wake up to realize,
Jim,
what they are supporting.
Well, you know, hold the daggum phone for a minute. They are not going to wake up, okay? I mean, do you have any insight to suggest to me that there's any empirical data that suggests that that hardcore cancerous knot of dead enders and hard cases is going to suddenly go, wow, no, okay, that's too far? I mean, the only thing is if he just really does walk out and give up on the wall. But see, he made it all good with them today. But no, we're definitely building the wall. It's going to be a beautiful wall, okay? They're not, I don't know, I can't point to anything that says they will ever give up on him, okay?
Your point is the statistics you referenced earlier of his base and the hardcore supporters of him.
Right.
Ranking around a third of the American voting population. That's basically it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I don't know if you can ever get people like that to change. I mean, once they get something like that put in their hard drives, there ain't no way to, you know, do
well,
anything
and,
with
and, but more than that, Jim, he is satisfying their most base urges and desires.
Well, you know, maybe that's what Putin would like for him to do. Like I say, the FSB and its minions have but one purpose. It's no longer ideological. It is to wreak havoc and to destroy everything in their path by any means possible.
And
I mean, we got a situation more dangerous now with them than we did when the Soviet Union was in power. We really do.
No, I don't take issue with you. And the thing about that whole notion of creative chaos is that if you're the person, if you're the entity that has sown the seeds of that creative chaos, then while you cannot predict what its outcome will be, you are already pre-positioned to try to take advantage of it, whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so here's one worth thinking about. You know, we had the revelation that Facebook, day late and a dollar short, the barn's burnt down to ashes and the horses are long gone. Facebook look, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and company look up and say, oopsie, oh my goodness, we actually took money from the Russian skeevy websites that that used Facebook to influence the election. Oops, the
How
baby.
100,000.
Yeah, I mean it's chump change, but still, you know, the job was done. So there's that. Well, now, Talking Points memo looked at Twitter, and they surveyed accounts that were suspended by Twitter for being run by Russian, what are called troll farms, all right? And then they tried to look at the patterns of behavior these troll farms engaged in. And guess what one of the things that they went after was? And this is going to be a real problem for the so-called progressive left that thinks that Putin is their best buddy. Because at the same time, you know, some of those folks will go, well, hell yeah, Black Lives Matter. Okay. Turns out those troll farms were actively engaged in sowing discord and dissent over Black Lives Matter, particularly in attacking Black Lives Matter activists. Okay.
Well, you know, it's just another frontier of their endeavor to create more and more chaos and discord. That's it. I mean, that's exactly what's happened.
And I mean, and here's what's interesting. According to this analysis, that troll farm that Talking Points memo found is also the same bunch that spent at least $100,000 on Facebook.
Oh yeah.
So what we're talking about here, no matter how desperately people try to deny it, what we're talking about here is a coordinated, deliberate assault on the body politic in this country.
Oh well, yeah, of course. That's been their objective all along. Ever since 1991. It was very slow then, and of course, you know, it's grown, it's developed. The KGB became the FSB, and still using the same operations, same operatives, same guidance, all that stuff. And if they can't get us one way, they're going to get us another. I mean, hell, they don't have to put a ballistic missile over here from Moscow. They've already got one. They've already got moles in all types of activities, financial and otherwise, ongoing in this country.
Well, you know, you don't.
Country apart.
The you know, nuclear war is messy. Wouldn't it be far easier if you could get the United States to just finish the job and turn into the paranoid authoritarian state that we started to become as of September 1st, 2011 or 2001? Wouldn't that be much more effective?
I guess, yeah, it would be. I mean, you've certainly got a lot of people in this country that have never been the same since that happened, and they never will be the same, you know? That's all there is to it. But like I say, the Russians don't have to do anything like that themselves other than, you know, have certain people at certain places at the right time viewing the personal habits of, for example, Donald Trump, but even in Moscow and other things. And, you know, like I say, Putin's got him right by the short hedge where he wants him. And now they've got all kinds of, I mean, why do you think he is so desperately, as you said before, afraid of anything revealing those Russian connections, that Putin has threatened himself to say, okay, if we can put you in, we can take you down.
There we go. Well, Jim, it's been a great conversation. By the way, Steve was out with a power outage there in the North Georgia mountains and asked me to convey his regards to you. So I told him he's a hell of a nice fellow,
and I always enjoy his conversations with you. And I'm glad he's getting life back to normal. I hope he is.
Same here. Power outages suck, but it came back, and so I imagine now he's bought a little bit of time, and so maybe in short order he can get himself that one of those kick-ass generators so that he won't have quite those worries.
You may as well get a Generac, because that's the only real thing, you know. These people who go out and buy these little $800 generators and stuff like that, you may as well go ahead and pluck down with Generac. It's something that's more reliable.
Well, it depends. It depends on what direction you want to go in. Those, as Keith pointed out a few nights ago, those Hondas are hard to beat.
Well,
and the question is one of, you know, because of the sensitivity of modern electronics, you want something with an inverter on it, and that kind of points toward the Honda. But most of those are, you know, like 2-kilowatt affairs. They're not going to run your whole house.
Well, I see the Generac will basically do that. And it's really a pretty reliable thing. I know my sister has one. It certainly helps her out a lot. That's for damn sure. And I haven't talked to her since the store visit went through South Carolina. I'm sure they did have losses of power down there. Hers, you know, would kick on, and, you know, it's a mighty handy thing to have. That's for damn sure. But anyway, again, my regards to our mutual friend here, and just I wish him well.
All right, you take care, Jim. Bye now.
Thanks, sir. Bye.
That's our buddy Jim calling from not too far away. Line's open now if you want to jump in. That's you're more than welcome to.
I want to go back to this business of Twitter and Facebook for a minute, because it tells us a little bit about what the game was, because it wasn't all the troll farm wasn't all pointed at the right wing. It was pointed at the left. What left, as well, because the whole purpose was to divide. And there's a phrase out there, something it goes back and it's historical, divide, and I'll have it in a minute here. Divide and divide and ameliorate. No, that's not it. Divide and divide and conquer. All right. Yeah, as far as generators go, Sparky pointing out, you need a 5-kilowatt generator to run a house. Yeah. The problem being that those with inverters on them, at least the shopping I've done, maybe I missed something, are kind of hard to find. The other recommendation I would make, because I've been down this road, get something for God's sakes with a battery start, with an electronic ignition. Because in the midst of a power outage, whether it be high summer or dead of winter, standing out there and hauling away on a pull cord is no fun. And in fact, it's about time to change the oil in the... And it's a Generac. And it's a 5K affair. It's just no good for running the studio. And we can run lights. You can't run your furnace on it or anything. But it'll do most of the jobs you need done. Short of trying to run equipment that needs nice, sweet, conditioned power. And they're really, those whisper quiet Honda affairs really are great for small jobs, like running computers and chargers and stuff like that. Well, that's a good observation, Kid Mark in the chat room. How about divide and wait till the fools kill each other? We may be maybe going in that direction too. Thanks. Thanks very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. The fundraising goal is now down to $325. $325, and making progress, hopefully. $325 to go, and about 51 minutes left in the program. If somebody's been dialing in, and if you want to try again, feel free, and we'll engage in conversation. What else? The nursing home. Hollywood, Florida. It's hard to talk about a story like this because it just is soaked in misery and agony. Eight people dead in the aftermath of Irma because of the failure of the backup generator system and the air conditioning in a nursing home that had more than 100 calls. More than 100 calls in the previous year to first responders. And people from the age of 71 to 99 died. Jesus. The Florida Sun Sentinel reporting, the first call for help from the sweltering nursing home came at 3 a.m. Wednesday. A patient in cardiac arrest. An hour later came the second call, a patient struggling to breathe. Only with the third call did rescue officials begin to realize the gravity of the situation. Rescue workers found three dead people on the second floor of the rehab center at Hollywood Hills. By the end of the day, five more were dead, all of them vulnerable elderly, ranging in age from 70 to 99. I saw one heartbroken woman interviewed saying, why didn't they just call me and I could have brought her to my home? And the answer is, of course, I don't know. There's a furious round of buck passing going on. The nursing home says it contacted Florida Power and Light when it lost power to the air conditioning. Meanwhile, the county says Florida Power and Light refused to speed up its response to senior living facilities. And then Florida Power and Light said the county never listed nursing homes as critical facilities in power outages. Really? So Florida Power and Light has to be told that nursing homes are critical in cases of power outages. Who knew? So, and then there's the issue of adequate backup power generation. The reports indicate that in the case of this particular nursing home, a tree branch broke off and knocked out a transformer that powered the air conditioning unit. Well, okay, wouldn't that be obviated by the presence of a full capacity generator system? Florida actually passed a law about gas stations having to have generators. But they haven't gotten around to requiring nursing homes to? I mean, it's not funny, it's not pleasant, but that old gag does obtain. You know, there's that joke out there that Florida is God's waiting room. It's not true. There's a lot of young people in Florida, too. But there are hundreds, if not thousands, of nursing homes in the state of Florida. How did the Florida state legislature, well, wait, why do I even continue? They're Republicans. Miss out on the idea of protecting a vulnerable population? Well, because, you know, people in nursing homes are just, you know, if you're a Republican, people in nursing homes are just there to be milked for their Medicare and Medicaid until such time as the radical coverage ectomy has been completed. And then, you know, they can go off to Jesus or Valhalla or, you know, whatever. But as I saw, and this is just because of how my mind works, maybe if I'd studied, you know, more concrete sciencey stuff in college, I wouldn't think this way. But instead, I was trained up in things that involve images and the imagination. And as I saw those frail bodies, people with thin, stick-like legs drawn up, you know, knees to chest, who may not have weighed 110 pounds, being wheeled out on gurneys to ambulances, I couldn't help seeing people who once upon a time were alive and active and vibrant, who laughed and cried, who went out, you know, in the the semi-tropical paradise that is South Florida, went out dancing or went to dinner, who raised children, who went to church, who shopped till they dropped, who maybe went down and fly fished on the flats for bonefish, and guys who reveled in that fight. Yeah. And they were little, barely recognizably human figures with their knees pulled up toward their chest, like Incan mummies left on an Andean mountaintop to freeze dry. And so you ask the question, why is it this way? And then you wind up with greater questions, and I mean no insensitivity in this whatsoever. Because, you know, like I've mentioned before, you know, I'm not a firearms guy, but it's almost enough to make you think about having one handy, because the one image, the one thing that kept going through my mind as I saw those pitiable human beings being rolled out on those gurneys, I don't ever want to be that way. But it's another case of our hunter-gatherer bodies not being at all well suited for our sedentary agrarian world. Or perhaps what is now being referred to as the Anthropocene. And I see nursing homes, and, you know, in my life I've had occasion to examine cases of people being abused and negligently harmed and killed in nursing homes. And, of course, that goes without saying, not all nursing homes. Got to do that now. You always have to do a not all if you're going to criticize something generally now. You have to say not all. Not all cops. Not all nursing homes. But, Jesus, if it's even one, it's too many. And there are caring people. But what it comes down to is a system, an organized system for warehousing human beings once they have reached a point where they cannot survive on their own. You know, it reminds me of the riddle of the Sphinx in Oedipus. What creature walks on all fours in the morning, walks on two legs at noon, and walks on three legs at twilight? Oedipus was a smart boy, and he said, "Why, that's a human being. That crawls when it's a baby, walks when it's an adult, and uses a cane in old age." But we have a deliberately planned economic system in this country that makes sure that the people who were raised and cherished and nurtured and fed and clothed and taught by the previous generation damned well don't have time when the time comes for turnabout. And for every good and loving family member who is there at least every day, well, those good and loving family members who go to those facilities know that there are probably nine who never show, or show up maybe once a week or once a month or, Jesus, once a year. And so I see horrors like this nursing home story, and I realize that there's horror beyond the immediate problem. Why is it that we can't take care of our elders? Well, because we live in a capitalist economy that says that it runs on Milton Friedman's economic principles, that says the first thing you've got to do is keep the workers scared to goddamn death, afraid they'll lose their job for anything or nothing, afraid to go away, afraid to take time off, and damned well can't afford to keep Granny in the home with them, or not even Granny. That was my experience. It was my grandmother in our home. But make sure that they can't keep Mama or Dad. Jesus, I turn on the TV in the morning and I see an ad with Joan London for A Place for Mom. Huh. I wonder why it's not A Place for Dad, because he's already checked out. And of course they mention in the ad along the way, you know, We look for, we'll help you find good living facilities for all seniors, but it's A Place for Mom. Jesus. Why not just put on ads that say Carousel awaits? Carousel, December 1929. Carousel awaits. Eventually, we'll probably get to that. But again, almost any issue of any real with any real depth to it, we're not going to talk. We're not going to have a national conversation about that. Nobody wants to go back to the single most successful life way that humanity has ever had. Nobody wants to live in extended families. We all want our own house with our own family in it. We'll raise the kids till they're old enough, and then we'll kick their happy asses out so they can go and lather, rinse, repeat. Well, the fact of the matter is, that is not the model of how humanity has best lived. Stuff I think about. And let's go over and talk to Thomas at FYI. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. I stepped in late and I apologize to the conversation, but you have been touching on something that I have not been able to talk about because it hurts too much. And I'm glad you are. And what I've been thinking about through Irma, especially in Texas and Harvey in Texas, is the states that have banned off-grid living, and especially with Irma and with the solar panels that the facilities could have had and could have generated the power necessary to keep these people alive during the storm. And there are real simple solutions to not a very complex problem, but it seems that because of fossil fuels and because of the conversation you were saying people don't want to have, we're stuck in this weird, if you want a clean environment, somehow you're not normal. How is that something that's good? I mean, they were criticizing the Pope for criticizing Trump about DACA and everything else, along with climate change and his encyclical. When he wrote that, the right wing was. But if they agree with him, oh, they'll cherry pick just like they do out of the Bible. And that's part of, to me, that's part of the reasons why we can never have a rational, normal conversation, because it's been allowed to be too rabid. And in 2014, I found a story basically saying where questioning about whether or not Florida was part of the being off grid was illegal. Why should using other natural resources that are free be off illegal? You know, I mean, in some communities, collecting rainwater for Pete's sake is illegal, which is just ridiculous. And this is a part of the conversation that you are having tonight that needs to be addressed as well, because this is only going to get worse. And the more we deny it, that carousel that you talked so eloquently about is going to be more true, and Shady Pines is not just going to be a Golden Girls joke.
No, it isn't.
And I don't know what to do about it. I really don't, except
I mean, I've just, I guess in my old age, I've become a little bit of a nihilist. You know, not a Big Lebowski nihilist, but
fair enough.
I've recognized that this country is never going to do the things that desperately need to be done. You know, I and I'm not crawling up on the cross or anything. I know we need the wood. But, you know, I've had my progressive values called into question. But by God, even Bernie won't introduce a corporate death penalty bill, which we need. I mean, that's another part of it. If it turns out that this is a nightmare of negligence on the part of the corporation that ran the nursing home, why shouldn't that corporation, because it's run for a profit, I don't care if you put Saint God's on it or not, it's run for a goddamn profit, why shouldn't that corporation be liquidated? Why shouldn't it be erased from the books and their facilities either taken over by the state or taken over, you know, by some other entity that can demonstrate a good faith willingness and ability to run the facility? You know, why isn't there a bill out there to completely erase Equifax from the face of the fucking earth? But there is not a single member of the House or Senate, and God knows, no president, and you know what? No candidate willing to talk about something so radical. Why is it radical to subject a corporation to something that we routinely subject poor people to? Death.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There's a great show. It was made on HBO, and it was a UK show first. It's an assisted living home. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it talks about all these issues in a satirical way. And sometimes satire is the best way to deal with something that we don't want to deal with. And, it's Getting On, I think is the name of it. I highly recommend both the British and the UK version. They're both very funny. And if you listen to how you see these people going through their everyday lives, the nurses and the caretakers, and then you see the moments of care and what they have to deal with, and then how they interact with each other. And you have some, like you said, where they just don't get visitors, and then you have some moments of where families are right in there with that person. And it's a great.
But you know, when you've got mom or dad off site, it's still heartbreaking, Thomas.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and especially this story especially is equally heartbreaking because enough. How many people need to die for this to be paid attention to? No one should have.
Well, no, I mean, we're going to pay attention to it. We'll pay attention to it for as long as the attention deficit disorder media can stand to. But that generally is defined as not long enough to actually get to the bottom of the story. This is, you know, the only reason that nursing home in Hollywood, Florida is getting any coverage is because of the ancient journalistic maxim, if it bleeds, it leads. Okay? They're not going to stick around. And they're not going to, okay, so maybe some of the old newspaper journalist types will. You know, maybe the Miami Herald will. Or maybe the Sun Sentinel will. But how many people read newspapers anymore? Okay, so one, you're not going to get to the bottom of it. Two, you know, maybe there will be some level of government investigation, but it'll be left to the plaintiff's bar, you know, the lawyers, to file the lawsuits for some kind of compensation. I guarantee goddamn you that corporate counsel for whoever the corporation is that owns that nursing home is earning his or her money right now, because they have, to use the phrase from The Godfather, gone to the mattresses.
Yes, indeed.
And so they're planning risk. They're working on risk management now. That's the mode that they're in. Because they know that the worst that can happen is that they'll be fined. You know, okay, so the Florida State Police say that they're treating it as a criminal investigation. You know, big damn deal. If that's the case, you know, somebody will go to some minimum security facility. Yes, it'll be embarrassing, but it won't be life-threatening or life-ending. You know, nobody, for damn sure, nobody's going to die of a fucking heat stroke at 3 o'clock in the morning in 92-degree heat. And so there will be no resolution or no meaningful resolution. It'll be out of sight, out of mind until the next hurricane comes or whatever the next disaster is. You know, I just had a note from Glenn, subject line, normal. Florida and Texas are bastions of people who for some reason think they are above the rest of the country. Unfortunately, they're finding that they're going to drown in a sea of their own denial. And that, you know, that applies to the climate change deniers. You know, it was easy to joke with Harvey and Irma both. Listen, Donald Trump has announced, and, you know, in the case of Irma, so did Rush Limbaugh, that the Trumpanzees don't have to evacuate. Okay? But this country doesn't have the ability to solve big problems. That's why this country is going to drag the rest of the world down as far as climate change is concerned. And the only hope that that lurks back there in the maggot mind is, well, okay, so the rest of the world will die, but it won't be us. We'll just keep on going, and then we'll have it all when everybody else is all dead. And that is how the maggot mind works. Does
Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right, because they're greedy, and in their mind, greed is good. And that's it doesn't matter about anything but the bottom line. It's to get ahead. That's why they're so in tune with things like the prosperity gospel, and that works for them, because it's exactly the same thing. And that's why Joel Osteen didn't end up opening his church until he was forced to.
Yeah, that's part of it. But some of us just plain old-fashioned human denial. Every human being, left, right, center, don't care, unless there's some sort of bodhisattva, has a little seed that says, yeah, but not me. Every last one of us. And it's when it becomes populational or institutional, then it becomes a crisis within a culture. There was some mention on the program last night of Rapa Nui, you know, Easter Island. And that question is always out there. I forget when I first saw it asked. What went through the mind of the person who chopped down the last tree on Easter Island? They can't have been thinking, well, you know, there'll be more trees. They were just thinking of, well, maybe somebody else, but not me, not today. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm glad you're having this discussion tonight. And that's why I'm going to put a call out to anybody who can to support your endeavor. And as soon as I'm able, I'm going to. I'm hoping I have some. My birthday is, you know.
Oh, man, don't send me your birthday money. Don't do that. Do not do that.
No.
But, you know, we're $325 in the hole. And
My birthday isn't until October, but I would be more than happy to make sure that you get something out, because you know I'm a big believer in pay it forward and socialism.
Yeah, but we've got to figure out some way to expand the Horn family I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, because you know, if I was sitting here saying that we needed enough money to, you know, because I joke about the Gulfstream 5. No, that's not it. I mean, you know, tiny, ancient little house, you know, not exactly having lobster for lunch or anything, and a shit ton of bills.
Yeah.
Bills that I can't even cope with right now. You know, one that's due tomorrow, period. Drop dead. And, you know, it is what it is.
I don't even
want to talk in those terms. I mean, the fundraising goal is what the fundraising goal is.
Well, if you can help, please do help. And as soon as I am able to, Bob, I'm gonna work on it to help you, and you know that. And when I can, I do. And as always, if you're a sustaining subscriber, and if you tell me that the $10 that we ask for FYI Nation as a monthly sustaining subscriber to go to you and your show, we'll send $5 over to you every month.
Bless your heart, Thomas.
Well, that's what we believe in.
And you know, I reached out to you when I was trying to put together the Patreon campaign, and it's still out there. I put that up mainly for folks who couldn't stand PayPal.
Yep.
But you know, it's out there, and you know, I'm going to sit down tomorrow before the mail runs, and there'll be another big stack of bumper stickers going out. So, you know, everybody who contributes at 10 gets a Horn bumper sticker. You can, you subscribe at 20, you get, the Horn bumper sticker and the They Want It All proprietary, unique only to the Horn bumper sticker. And, you know, I'm getting those out as quickly as I possibly can.
Oh, I know you are, and it's tough that we have to do this, but George Soros ain't paying us.
Nor is
Vlad. We're not coming.
This program is not brought to you by any sketchy Russian websites or skeevy Russian billionaires. Damn the luck.
I know, right?
Yeah, kind of sucks.
Well, it is.
You know, the goddess of irony being the goddess of irony, it would be hilarious if I picked up the phone one day and went, yeah, hello, it's Bob. And they went, hello, Mr. Bob, you skeevy Russian billionaire. I would like to support your program. And then it's like, well, I know what I am. It's just a matter of negotiating the price.
Take up for all he's got.
Yeah.
Make it like a divorce.
Well, I don't know, but then you know, it's not like we have machine gun toting guards here at the gate. You know, they show up, they say, "Hey, you say something bad. We're not paying you to say bad things about sweet sugar daddy Vlad. Hey, he's one who okay to pay you." Oh, really? Yes, you not know this? And by the way, since Big Bad Vladdy Daddy has come into the conversation, I have something to recommend to you and everybody
please.
Else. You know, some of the best political writing was the stuff that Hunter S. Thompson produced. You know, not just Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but the stuff that's The Great Shark Hunt, you know, his coverage of the Nixon campaign, things like that. And then later on, into the late 80s and early 90s, I remember reading a piece that he wrote about being out on a drunken, drug-fueled binge with Clarence Thomas and a limousine and some hookers. It was brilliant. Hilarious. And he wrote it in such a way that, you know, part of you was going, could this possibly be true? You know, it was outrageous, but it was so good that you just almost were ready to go. And I don't know who this person is, but it was published over at Daily Coast by Freeway Blogger on September 11th.
Oh,
and
boy.
And this does honor to the memory of Hunter Thompson. Hunter Thompson doesn't come into the conversation. It's just in that style. And the title of the post is, back in 1982, I was dealing acid at Jim Morrison's grave, and that's when I first met Vladimir Putin.
Wait, what?
The title of the piece at Daily Coast is, back in 1982, I was dealing acid at Jim Morrison's grave, and that's when I first met Vladimir Putin. And if you didn't know better, you would swear that Hunter Thompson's bastard son had gotten himself an account at Daily Coast. And whoever Freeway Blogger is, I mean that as the highest of compliments. But go find it, read it, enjoy the hell out of it.
Oh, I will. I need some good reading, especially with what happened in North Korea tonight, because...
Oh, Thomas, here. No, wait, just stop. All stop. Scotty, engines all stop. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference.
Oh, I
love it. Captain. The dilithium crystals could use a rest. Don't worry about North Korea. Please. Please don't worry about North Korea. I mean, don't waste a second. Don't waste a micro millisecond. Don't waste a nanosecond of the precious finite time of your existence on this little planet worrying about North Korea. For two reasons. If they do something stupid, what will follow from that is as inevitable as you know, water flowing downhill and seeking its own level.
Very true.
But they don't worry because odds are they aren't going to do something. Because they have no vested interest in doing something. Not even settling an old score with Japan. Please. And I mean, I'm not editing your program or anything. Please don't worry about North Korea. And please don't worry the people who share their time with you about North Korea. Because the vast majority of progressive people in this country are a lot more likely to be gunned down in one of those random motherfucking National Rifle Association death lottery roulette spins than they are to be nuked by Kim Jong bad haircut.
That is true. And the only reason I brought it up was because of who our orange menace is. And I don't know why my TV just turned on automatically, but that's weird. But that being
said, I'm sorry, Thomas. Your TV must be on. We have terrifying North Korea news for you, Thomas. Be afraid, Thomas. Be very afraid.
And it's a Trantolo and Trantolo commercial. Okay, that's weird.
And I mean, this is the same attitude that I manifested about the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine, okay? Bin Laden. I mean, you can't walk around scared out of your wits.
Oh, Bob, that's easy for you to say. You're on the east. You're in the mountains of Appalachia. You're not here out here on the west coast where Kim Jong bad haircut could wipe us all out. Oh, please. You're more likely to be burnt down than you are nuked down. And I'm not making fun of people's fears.
No, I know you're not.
But
I know,
Jesus Christ, we can't run around with one thumb up our ass because we're scared to death that some little fucking North Korean fuck is going to ruin the fall foliage.
I'm not so much scared about that. I'm more scared about any orange menace's overreaction to it.
Well, and but again, what can you?
You can't do anything, except kind of like my TV. Sometimes it just turns on because why the fuck not? You know. But you're right. It's just, it's sad that. The scorn we have for, or we don't have, but the scorn people have allowed to have happen for Jimmy Carter when he says, talk about peace and talk about dealing with people on an equal level or trying to bring people to an equal playing field, that is ridiculed. And admittedly, there are some people you just can't. Tommy Loren comes to mind.
Oh, white power Barbie, please.
Yeah.
No, I'm so done with her. She's look, when your great granddaddy was indicted for entering the country, you know, for trying to become a citizen illegally, she can just shut the fuck up forever as far as I'm concerned. It's just over.
Oh, I agree with you on that one. Considering I'm at the first citizen from on my father's side and then he came here legally. He didn't forge nothing.
Well, I mean, fuck, the Kincaid boys came here illegally because they were supposed to be busy having their heads removed from their fucking shoulders by the English. I mean, you can't get a hell of a lot more illegal than sneaking away from your English captors.
Fair enough.
So, you know, sorry. And, I mean, that's just, you know, it's just where it is. Thomas, it's been a lovely conversation, though. I got to roll because we're almost out of time, though.
Indeed, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Thomas from FYI.
Yeah, don't be afraid. And no, I'm not gonna close the program with "Don't Fear the Reaper" or anything. I've got all the cowbell I need right here. Yeah, gentle little ring for the right. Robert in Australia writes, "I've seen enough nursing homes recently to know I don't want to ever be in one. Good facilities, good staff, but no, just too depressing. And we had the assisted suicide debate here in Australia some years ago. One state allowed it for a time, but it was overturned by the federal government, who decided that just being alive was better, even if you were bedridden and living in pain. The BBC made a sitcom called Waiting for God, set in a retirement home. Also, the Atlantic hurricane season runs from June 1st to November 30th. I'm already wondering what happens in 2018 and then in 2019, and then what happens when rebuilding homes becomes pointless? Well, that was the point of my analogy about the bricks through the windows. So you and I are on the same wavelength at a tremendous distance, Robert. Meanwhile, Glenn says, "Send me bumper stickers. I'll buy them. Really, more people should listen to the show." Oh, God, I thought you already had yours, Glenn. That's my bad. I will put you on the list and make sure you get them both. Steve, on the Gulf Coast, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, says, subject line, "Bring out your dead." I'm pretty sure the line between the inhumane and the inhuman isn't really so thin. But don't put your money on whether or not the average American really knows the difference anymore, or cares even when they do. Regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. You know, Steve, we gotta have a talk. You're really, really competing with my competing for the little ray of fucking sunshine title here. And I mean, you know, no, seriously, I know what you're saying. It's that to which it's the difference in an analysis between that to which we are attached and that from which we are detached. I'm pretty sure that a whole bunch of people who consider themselves fine people would be horrified at the idea of, let's just say if you gave them the grand tour of a CAFO, you know, with the cattle standing up to whatever passes for knees in a cow. I guess their knees, in its own excrement. Or getting so sick that it can't stand up and they pick it up with a goddamn front-end loader and, you know, take it to the slaughter site. There'd probably be a lot more vegetarians. I like to think that if there was some way to get an audience for people to watch a mountain be blown up and see the poisons just roll down into the valley, into places where, you know, young people, old people, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, kids, cousins, babies in the womb live, and that shit gets into their body. If you could get enough people to see that, you'd probably have enough of a movement to end it. And that's what I mean when I say it's a matter of that from which people are detached and that to which they are attached. Ron and Raleigh, did I just hear old Nikolai Kinkaidsky, another member of the far-flung Kinkaid clan? Yes, you did. Yes, you did. That is Nikolai Mountaineerovich Kinkaidovich. And he's passing fair fellow. He's not that guy. He's friend of the United States. Certainly. As long as we do as we are told. Thank you, Ron. I think you own that gimmick now, too. Clarence with a note. Says, Bob, I remember President Carter wanted to disengage from South Korea in 1978. The capitalists went crazy. The idea was shot. Happens. Funny how, anytime something comes along that smells like it might be halfway rational. Goddamn Jimmy Carter, he give the goddamn Panama Canal back to them Panamanians.
Yeah, the nerve of them little people. I mean, what? I mean, they think just because the Panama Canal's right there in Panama that they somehow own it or something? Don't they realize God and Jesus H. Christ done give us the Panama Canal, and now that goddamn lily-livered Jerry Carter done give it away? I remember it, don't you? Man. Okay, let's go run over to the phones real quick. Again, about $325 to go in fundraising for the evening. It would be lovely to knock that down. Because there's like $200 of bills that have to be paid like yesterday. So, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Is that me?
It's me. Is it you?
This is CL in Seattle.
Yeah, hi.
And I wasn't sure if you had me connected or somebody else. I just wanted to pass something along, Bob,
yes.
In the last couple of minutes before your show ends.
Mm-hmm.
On yesterday's show, when you broke off the show an hour early, I tuned in to another radio station out of Chicago,
uh-huh.
Norman Goldwyn's show, actually, and he had a guest host on, who at the time when I tuned in was right in the middle of reading an article. Turns out it's taken me all last evening and part of today to locate it because I called his station and Krista, the lady who handles the phones, was in another city from where he was at, and she emailed him to try to get the title. Anyhow, I have it now. I've got it, and I wanted to pass this along to you because you might want to do a little research on this story. It's really, really grim. It has to do with Rick Scott's government in Florida and how they handled the hurricane. And this is the title of the show, of the article. It's from the Miami Herald. It was posted at 2:26 on the 12th. So it would have been 2 days ago. And here's the title. Does Governor Rick Scott's tight control of information matter in an emergency? Again, does Governor Rick Scott's tight control of information matter in an emergency? And when I was listening to Dick Kaye, he was the guest host, when I was reading this, it was a litany, an absolute litany of like a couple dozen or nearly a couple dozen different issues that were just absolutely causing people untold confusion, untold lack of any detail. Options about where they could go, what they could do, where they could find gas. If they were blocked at one location, they couldn't figure out where it was safe to go.
Yeah, I've got it.
Anyhow,
I've got it in front of me. It'll make for a little light reading before bedtime.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, there you go. All right, that's just what I wanted to get to you before the show ended.
All right, I appreciate it, Seal. Thank you very kindly.
You're very welcome. Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye now. CL calling from the Great Northwest. Does Governor Rick Scott's tight control of information matter in an emergency? Miami Herald, if you just type that in, it'll pop up for you, and you'll probably have it'll probably be as easily found as it was for you as it was for me. All right, time to get out of here. Hey, cool. Tomorrow's Friday on the Front Porch. One of my four or five favorite days of the week. So I look forward to seeing you there. In the meantime, have a wonderful evening. And, you know, if we can knock down some of this nightmare fundraising thing, sure would be helpful. Hate to talk about it. I really do. But there it is. So y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River.
River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.